Hello, this is Ian Berg with the commercial news, dated Wednesday, August 21st, 2019. We'll start today on the front page of the paper with the article, "Carl to announce large development project. City sets marijuana public meeting for September 3rd," by Jennifer Bailey, Danville. It's been more than 2 years since local officials began talks about a large project that needed acres of land. Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. says he can finally make the announcement on the project today. "We will be announcing the new development today at 9 a.m. in the council chambers," according to Williams. In an email about the press conference, it listed those attending: Williams, Vermilion Advantage President and CEO Vicky Haugen, Carl Senior Vice President of Primary Care and Specialty Services Caleb Miller, Carl VP Primary Care Amy Lee, Carl Executive Director Facilities Planning and Construction Nick Crompton, and Carl Hospital Administrator Heather Tucker. The news conference is to announce plans for a development with Carl to better accommodate Danville, Vermilion County, and neighboring communities. Earlier this month, Williams told aldermen land acquisitions has taken more than 8 months. "I can't discuss the specifics because I'm under non-disclosure," Williams said, adding it will be a great project that is coming to town. It's going to transform a whole neighborhood and part of the center of our city. Williams said the project requires 17 acres and 66 parcels. Land Bank, and local officials have not commented on the project. At Tuesday night's Danville City Council meeting, the council heard from former Big Boy Restaurant and Border Cafe property owners Phil Thomas and Carrie Barrett about wanting the city to act on the sale of recreational marijuana. They want to sell their Lynch Road property for such sales to another business. Williams said he hadn't set a timeline for talks about the new law that goes into effect in January. City officials suggested having a public meeting to get the public's view about the sale of marijuana in the city at the September 3rd City Council meeting. Williams also updated aldermen on expecting three casino applications by today's deadline. "I'm very excited about that," he said. In other business, council members approved the appointments of Police Chief Chris Yates and City Engineer Sam Cole. Yates became emotional talking before a packed council chamber, which included several police officers. He talked about the sacrifices police officers' families make and also said about the police department, "We put together a good team. We got a lot of things to do." After the swearing-in of Yates, former alderman Lloyd Randall said he opposed Yates' appointment when the city didn't do a broader search, and he challenged Yates to "diversify your department in gender and race." The council also postponed an amendment to city code pertaining to intoxicating liquor and video gaming revenue to grandfather in existing license holders, but require new license holders not to receive more than 49% of their revenue from gaming. There were additional concerns about bars trying to sell their business in the future, and some people suggested the city look at other ordinances, such as champagne urbanas. Next, we'll go to the article, "A Fitting Tribute: Rebuilt Trail to Honor Longtime Naturalist," by Mary Wyckoff, Westville. Friends of the late Marilyn Campbell are delighted that a trail is being renovated in her honor at Forest Glen Preserve. "It's a testament to Marilyn, her work, and her life," said Suzanne Smith, president of the Middle Fork Audubon Society. "We're excited to break ground and make this possible for the community." Middle Fork Audubon, Vermilion County Conservation District, and the Vermilion County Conservation Foundation launched the Marilyn F. Campbell Memorial Appeal in June to raise money for the project. The goal of the first phase was to raise $28,300 to rebuild and improve the Beech Grove Handicap Trail, within Forest Glen and the Russell M. Duffin Nature Preserve in the county. The appeal has been a big success, with donations pouring in from all over the country to honor Campbell. She's been the face of the district for many years, Amy Steeples, program secretary with the district, said, and has touched many lives. Due to a wet spring, work has not started yet on the trail. Campbell, who died on September 21, 2017, was hired by the Conservation District in 1969 and became its first Director of Education and Programs in 1972. When she joined the district, Forest Glen was a fledgling park, and much had to be done. Besides her work as a naturalist, Campbell was Executive Director of the Illinois Audubon Society and an active member of the Middle Fork chapter. She also was a certified evaluator for Therapy Dogs International and brightens residents' lives at the Veterans Affairs Ileana Healthcare System. The first phase of the project includes resurfacing the asphalt trail to a 5-foot width, replacing the bench overlooking the wooded ravine, repainting fencing, and adding a dedication plaque. The plaque will be attached to a large rock found by district naturalist Nick Jurison. What's interesting about the stone is that when you look at it, it looks like the face of an owl, Smith said. That was a delight to her friends. Campbell was passionate about owls, and her license plate said barn owl. In fact, district naturalist Susan Biggs Warner said something unusual happened a couple of weeks ago. Two people on different dates spotted an owl, which could have been a barn owl, a rare sight in Forest Glen. In her 37 years with the district, Biggs Warner said she's never seen the barn owl with its distinctive heart-shaped face. However, the barred owl is common. When the people described the owl to the birders, the experts said the description fits that of a barn owl. We're excited about the possibility of it being a real barn owl, Biggs Warner said, stressing that it is an unconfirmed sighting. Besides the appeal for donations, the Wheeler Foundation awarded a $20,000 grant. The foundation helps with projects for people with disabilities. Middle Fork, the district, and the foundation have all pledged funds, services, or equipment to the project. Any additional funds will be used for Phase 2. As funds allow, work will continue on the handicapped accessible picnic area, restrooms, and parking. If further funds become available, the district staff would like to add interpretive signs along the trail. We've been wonderfully surprised at the generous donations, Smith said. People have been very generous. She and others were hoping that work could begin this spring. However, the earlier rains have delayed that. Once the work is finished, there will be a dedication ceremony. It's worth the wait, Smith said. Nearly 40 years ago, Campbell hired a young man, Mike Reddy, who used a wheelchair. He enjoyed helping when she led children into the woods to study nature, but he couldn't go on the trail. Still, the children would gather around him to talk about nature. Campbell recognized his talent with children and persuaded the Conservation District to help develop the Beech Grove Trail for people with disabilities. When the 1/3-mile trail was completed in 1976, Reddy was able to lead hikers into the woods. Over time, the trail deteriorated as tree roots lifted and broke the asphalt surface, and it's no longer considered handicap accessible. With the renovations, everyone will be able to enjoy the trail, whether in a wheelchair, using a cane or walker, or with a small child in a stroller. It's not just for the handicapped, Smith said, adding that senior citizens regularly use the trail. When Campbell became ill in 2017, she asked friends to drive her to Forest Glen. On good days, she would walk the trail, which brought her many fond memories. It's wonderful to have something at the park to honor her, Biggs Warner said. Now we'll go to the article, DACC to Mull Balanced Budget, by Carol Rome, Danville. Danville Area Community College Board of Trustees, on Thursday, will review a proposed spending plan for the 2020 fiscal year. Board members also will consider placing the tentative budget on public display for 30 days, with final approval anticipated at the September 26th meeting. "We're going to present a balanced budget," DACC President Stephen Nocco said. "This year's proposed operating budget is $17.1 million, an increase of about 2.9% compared to last year's budget of $16.4 million. With an expected increase of more than $400,000 in operating and state formula equalization grants, the tentative budget will support investing in human resources to maintain quality student services, provide training needed to meet the employment demands of the community, provide training needed for assessment of student learning outcomes, add an esports gaming program for students, cover software increases for certain programs, and add network monitoring software. The state supplied about 22.6% of DACC's budget revenue last year, but this year that number will increase to about 25%. "The state is phenomenal," he said. "When I got here in 2016, Illinois was a train wreck, but now it is increasing revenue and supporting infrastructure and education." The college also has benefited by maintaining a steady enrollment. "Our enrollment has stayed stable, and that has enabled DACC to get a larger share of the state appropriation," Nocco said. Local property taxes last year made up about 32% of the budget, but this year that amount will decrease to 31.76%, with the overall tax rate totaling around 60.96 cents per $100 in equalized assessed valuation, depending on what the EAV turns out to be. The current rate is 60.70 cents. Tuition and fees will make up 38.6% of the new operating budget, a decrease compared to 46% last year. Nocco said the perfect model would be if the state, local property taxes, and tuition and fees each contributed one-third towards the total operating revenue. "The state is stepping up," he said. "We're getting closer to the quintessential model. You don't want the students or the local taxpayers to bear too much of the burden," he said. Also on Thursday, the trustees will hear a report on continuing education and college for kids. They will hear a report on liberal arts and library services. They will hear a financial update. They will hear the president's report. They will consider approving the permanent transfer of $135,542 in earned interest monies to the education fund from the working cash fund. They will consider approving the travel expenses of $249 for trustee Greg Wolf to attend the Illinois Community College Trustees Association's Executive Committee Retreat from August 1st through 3rd at John A. Logan College in Carterville. They will consider approving a bid of $41,930 from Haas HFO Chicago of Elk Grove Village to purchase a CNC lathe with Perkins Grants funds. The lathe will be used in the Technology Center machine shop. They will consider approving a bid of $90,000 from Young Trucks of Canton, Ohio, to purchase two used 2015 Freightliner Cascadia semi-tractors. And finally, they will consider approving a bid of $67,859 from Glesco Electric in Urbana to replace the Bremer Theater stage lighting system. We'll now go to the death notices. Glenn D. Archer of Savoy, formerly of Allerton, passed away on Monday, August 12th. Visitation will take place at 10 a.m. to noon on Saturday, August 24th, at the Joines Funeral Home in Newman, with a memorial service following. Masonic funeral rites will be given at Pleasant Ridge Cemetery, northeast of Newman, following the memorial cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be given to Shriners Children's Hospital of Chicago. Dolores May Payne Rainwater, 79, of Rossville, passed away on August 13, 2019. Private services will be held. Burial in Locust Grove Cemetery in Locust Grove, Indiana. Robert Bob Wiest, 84, of Danville, passed away on Saturday, August 17th. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the Waste New Book Memorial Fund at the Danville Public Library or the charity of your choice. Graveside services and burial will be at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, August 20th, in Columbia Church Cemetery in Princeton, Indiana. Max Reed Anderson, 70, of Danville, passed away on August 17th. Funeral Mass will be at St. Paul's Catholic Church at noon on Thursday, August 22nd, with a two-hour visitation prior to Mass. Per his wishes, cremation rites have been accorded. Joe L. Brown, 76, of Oakwood, passed away on Saturday, August 17th. Private graveside services will be conducted at a later date. For a little more about the police chief in Danville, we'll head over to today's News Gazette. For the article, Police Chief is Acting No Longer, by Noelle McGee, Danville. Chris Yates can now drop the acting from his job title. The Danville City Council on Tuesday approved Mayor Ricky Williams Jr.'s recommendation to make Yates the permanent police chief. In the short time he's been in these acting roles, he's demonstrated the character, leadership, skills, and vision necessary to take the police department to a higher level of service for our citizens, Williams said of the 24-year law enforcement veteran. Yates became Danville's interim public safety director on March 29th, following the retirement of longtime director Larry Thomason. He became the acting police chief in May after the council approved moving from a public safety director to oversee both the police and fire departments to separate police and fire chiefs. Williams said he's eager to appoint a permanent fire chief and already has someone in mind. However, he said the city and fire union are currently in the process of impacting bargaining to allow for that change within the department's structure. Don McMasters is serving as acting fire chief. The police department currently has 57 and one-half sworn officers and will be fully staffed once six new officers are sworn in on September 11th. The fire department currently has 43 firefighters. We're in the process of hiring one, so that will put us at full staffing in that department, Williams said. A 1990 Bismarck Henning High graduate, Yates spent 6 years in the Illinois Army National Guard Infantry. He also served as a team leader and trainer at Lincoln's Challenge in Rantoul. During that time, he earned an associate degree in criminal justice from Danville Area Community College and a bachelor's in administration of justice from Southern Illinois Carbondale. Yates began his law enforcement career in 1995. With the Vermilion County Metropolitan Enforcement Group. In 1997, he joined the Danville Force, where he served as both community-oriented policing services and field training officers, as well as emergency response unit operator. In 2003, he was promoted to sergeant in the Criminal Investigations Division and became ERU team leader. 2 years later, he was promoted to commander and has served in various capacities. Yates said he was honored and humbled to be selected to lead the department. Although he officially ended his duties as a commander on Friday, don't expect him to stay behind his desk. There are a lot of administrative duties, but I think going out and observing the officers and command staff on the street is a huge part of my job, he said. I love being on the street, and a lot of my ideas for different strategies and programs we develop come from the feedback I get from the community, citizens as well as corporate citizens. We have to see what our challenges are and work together with them on how we can mitigate these challenges and you can't do that sitting in your office the whole time. Yates said he's proud of the things the department has done over the past few months, including strengthening and building upon relationships with community partners. He said he and his staff have also been working nonstop on developing short and long-term plans, both operational and organizational, to further improve the department and public safety. He plans to present them to the mayor in late September. And now for some local sports, we'll head to the article, Speakers Fall in Extra Innings, by Chad Dare. Shelby, North Carolina. Danville Post 210 first baseman Chase Vinson dropped to his knees as members of the Idaho Falls, Idaho Legion baseball team celebrated their 4-3 victory in 9 innings at the American Legion World Series at Keter Stadium. Vinson, a 4-year player for the Speakers, collected himself and consoled a number of teammates before Danville and Idaho Falls exchanged handshakes after a thrilling semifinal contest that featured solid pitching, key hits, and great defensive plays. More than 30 minutes after the walk-off win for Idaho Falls, Vinson wanted a keepsake, a photo with Danville manager Alan Shepard, on the Veterans Field at Keter Stadium. With workers clearing the stands and raking the field, both Vinson and Shepard held back tears for the photo. "This hurts," Vinson acknowledged. "Coming so close to something that would have been special is going to hurt." But the sophomore-to-be at Danville Area Community College and the former standout at Oakwood admitted that Keter Stadium is where he wanted his Legion career to end. He just hoped it would have been in the championship game and with a different result. "You obviously hate to see it end, but I would have never thought that my last game with Post 210, I would be wearing this American Legion World Series jersey," he said. "We battled. We competed. We did what we had to do to win the game. Idaho is a tremendous team. Mason Ecker threw a heck of a game, holding them to only one hit. It just wasn't meant to be for us." Ecker's performance on the mound, allowing 3 runs, all unearned, while allowing just a double to Randon Hostert of Idaho Falls during its 3-run third inning. "That was my best, especially on this big stage," said Ecker, who struck out 8 and walked 3 in 6.2 innings as he reached the 105 pitch limit in the 7th. "I wanted to give the team my ultimate best, and I feel I did that." But even with that pitching performance, Danville still found itself trailing 3-1 going into the 7th inning, a position that Post 210 was familiar with during this season, as the Speakers won 6 postseason games, including the state championship game against Barrington and the Great Lakes Regional Championship against Beverly Lowell of Ohio, in their final at-bat. "This was the epitome of our season," said Shepard. "Idaho Falls was supposed to 10-run us, according to everyone, but those of us from Vermilion County. Our scrappy bunch showed their heart and why we were here in this game. We gave it everything we had, and it was a joy to watch." The Post 210 comeback in the 7th inning was vintage Speakers baseball this summer. Ernest Plummer got things started with a one-out single to right, but he was erased when Kota Broker bounced into a fielder's choice. Danville needed a two-out rally. Chase Rademacher kept things going with an infield single as Broker advanced to second. That brought up Vinson as the go-ahead run, but Idaho Falls pitched him carefully, and he drew the two-out walk to load the bases, with Logan Spicer coming to the plate. "I've been in a few situations like this year," said Spicer, who led the Speakers with 54 RBIs this summer. Sure enough, the third baseman lined a 0-2 pitch from Idaho Falls right-hander Caden Christensen into center. Broker and Rademacher scored, tying the game at 3-3. "These guys don't ever quit," Shepard said. "A lot of these kids have grown up as baseball players this summer, and they learned how to play team baseball." Idaho Falls nearly won the semifinal contest in the bottom of the 7th, but left fielder Jake Stipp made a nice running catch to end the inning. In the 8th, Stipp singled to right center, and advanced to second on a sacrifice bunt by Dalton Dalby, who came into pitch for Ecker. Plummer's chance to be a hero as he grounded out to second to end the threat. "We didn't get the key hits when we needed them," Plummer admitted. Spicer, who had hit the big hit in the seventh, came up with one of the best plays of the night in the bottom of the eighth. His diving stop on a one-hopper by Hostert and throw to first was worthy of any highlight show on television. Finally, in the bottom of the ninth, Idaho Falls got a leadoff single from Andrew Gregerson, who stole second and advanced to third on groundout by Jackson Sorensen. Nick Leyland, who entered the game in the eighth inning, hit a hard shot to Broeker at second, who was unable to make the play, allowing Gregerson to score with the winning run. "It's part of baseball," said Dalby. "There's always more than one play that will come back to bite you in the end. They just got two hits to our seven, but they made the most of those hits." Spicer added, "It just came down to who executed and who didn't." Post 2-10 ends the summer with 38-10-1 record. The Speakers claimed their third state title in 4 years and their first ever Great Lakes Regional Championship. Idaho was scheduled to play Fargo, North Dakota in an 11-4 winner over Destrehan, Louisiana in the other semifinal. The championship game was suspended by weather and will be played at 9 a.m. today at Keeter Stadium. And now with the time we have left, let's head over to the Community Brief section to see what's going on in the local area. In Danville, dance scheduled. Starlight Ball will be from 6:30 to 9 p.m. today in Harrison Park Clubhouse. Bev Wolf and Company will provide the music. Cost will be $10 per person. Concert planned. Moray Chapel Church of Christ at 19194 East 1100th North Road will host the Dave Melton Family Singers from Columbus, Indiana at 5:30 p.m. Saturday for a gospel sing. A meal will follow the concert. Call Melissa at 217-799-7592 for information. K of C lists events. The Knights of Columbus at 310 Bryan Avenue will cook hamburgers and hot dogs from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. on Saturday on the patio. The cost for either will be $5. Left 4 Dead Band will entertain from 7:30 to 11:30 p.m. on Saturday on the patio. This band plays acoustical guitars. All are welcome. Church plans meal. Greater Shiloh Baptist Church at 609 North Bowman Avenue plans a fish fry for 11:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Thursday. Cost will be $10. Eat in or carry out. For delivery of four or more orders, call 446-5502. Pottery on view. The Danville Art League has its first pottery exhibit at the Paul Bramahim Gallery through September. The exhibit features works by Art League members and artists from the community. Many works are for sale. The Art League continues to offer a starving artist sale. Pieces are offered for sale at the bargain price of $5. The Art League at 320 North Franklin Street is open 9 a.m. to noon, Tuesday through Saturday. For information, call 217-442-9264 or check www.danvilleartleague.com. That's all the time we have for today's reading. This has been Ian Berg with the commercial news, dated Wednesday, August 21st, 2019. Thanks for joining me today.